Hi, this is Carrie, and this is a podcast that's going to cover your acute neuro case study with spinal cord injury. This first one will just basically have me talking through the case, helping you pull out some of the really important points. It will also go all the way through the labs, as well as question number one, which is analyzing those lab results. So the goal with this is just to help you get a really good understanding of the case, how this patient is presenting, what maybe some of these terms mean, and how what this picture of this person looks like. So therefore, you can better complete the rest of the questions that correlate with this case. So with that, let's start with our case. Alan is an 18-year-old male who lost control of his Jeep and struck a tree. Witnesses state he was not restrained and that his face hit the windshield on impact. So there's a couple important points in there. He wasn't restrained. That means he's going to have possibly more sustained injury, and his face hit the windshield on impact. So as we're thinking about that motion, as a car hits the windshield, that person flies forward, hits the windshield, so we have a hyperextension injury of the neck. When paramedics arrived, Allen's demonstrated spontaneous eye opening. He was responsive but confused and stated that he couldn't feel his legs at all. He had significant facial swelling and lacerations. The paramedics initiated a C-spine precautions and strapped him onto a blackboard. Allen's skin was warm and diaphoretic. Again, there's two things there to take note of, the warm and diaphoretic. They started oxygen at 15 liters per minute via a non-rebreather mask and initiated two 16-gauge IV catheters. Rapid infusions of normal saline were started at the scene. Initial vital signs, blood pressure of 96 over 60, heart rate of 54, respirations of 12, and labored. Pulse oximetry was 88%. Prior to oxygen, on arrival to ED is 73% with a non-rebreather at 8 liters per minute. So he is doing a little bit better, except look what happens as time passes. So he's 88% initially, is having a hard time breathing. They put oxygen on, and actually his oxygen gets worse. So the longer he gets, it takes him to get to the ER, the worse he is getting, even with oxygen on. On arrival to the ED 10 minutes later, his vital signs are blood pressure 90 over 50, heart rate of 54, weak and irregular. That's a new concept from his initial assessment when he was there, when they first assessed him. His respirations are 8 and labored with decreased chest expansion noted on the left side, absent breath sounds left lower lobe, and decreased breath sounds left side, but his trachea is still midline. So that is telling us he is having some decreased breath sounds on the left, absent breath sounds on the lower left lobe. So possibly he has some broken ribs that has punctured part of that left lung, although it has not turned into a tension pneumo because his trachea is still midline. So that's a good thing if they can get in there soon with a chest tube. But when we look, I want to take a second and stop our thoughts about the breath, but I want to go back up to the pulse and respirations, blood pressure and heart rate. His blood pressure is 90 over 50, so his blood pressure from his initial assessment is dropping. His heart rate is remaining the same, but is now weak and irregular. So if we think about what happened, what could be the cause for the heart to not compensate? If somebody's blood pressure is low, what do we normally expect the heart rate to do? We expect it to increase. Here, it's not compensating like it normally should because it continues to be pretty low. So what could be going on with a weak and irregular heart rate now? Possibly because he's 18, we're not necessarily thinking heart attack, but he's been flying around that vehicle and he has bruising throughout his chest as well, which we'll read in a little bit. So could it be a cardiac contusion? Could he have some bruising around the heart? That might be a thought to think about with that. So jumping back down to where we were, the paramedics state they didn't feel any subcutaneous emphysema with palpation of the chest, but did note crepitus on the left side, fourth and fifth ribs. So again, fractured ribs that probably punctured the lung. And Alan did have pain on palpation to this area. 2 liters of normal saline have been infused during the previous 10 minutes. So the ED physician and healthcare team members complete a primary and brief secondary exam with the following findings. He has a verbal response to voice. but is not oriented to time, place, or situation. He knows his name. He is anxious and restless. He is able to move his upper extremities on command with decreased hand grip on the right, deferred exam on the left. And so when they defer an exam, that's again because of a broken arm. And here he has a positive deformity of the left wrist and diffuse tenderness over the lower left forearm. He is unable to move either lower extremity, so neither of his legs he's able to move. He's got absent patellar and Achilles tendon, deep tendon reflexes bilaterally, diminished peripheral pulses with cold skin signs, prolonged capillary refill. So here he has no movement of his lower extremities. Generally, when someone comes in with a car accident or any head trauma, which we obviously have here as well, he had significant facial swelling and lacerations. I'm concerned about, again, his spinal cord. We generally would want to do a glioblastoma score and do a GCS score and figure that out. When someone has actual spinal cord injury and they have no movement of their lower extremities, it's going to be an invalid or inaccurate number simply because it's not generally due to a problem in their brain that they're not able to move their legs. It's because of their spinal cord laceration. So their motor movement is not going to be an accurate finding. So generally, they do not do a glioblastoma score on people with spinal cord injuries. But all other head trauma, we would do that for. All right, going back here, he has generalized facial edema with full thickness, 3 centimeter left cheek laceration, and left depressed mandibular fracture. So he has a lot of bruising on his face. He's got some cuts and scrapes. He also has broken his mandible. So he's going to have some swelling there as well. We're going to need to be careful when we assume, obviously, we're going to be intubating him. I don't want to lead too much into the next part, but we'll have to be careful with that mandible fracture as well. There is also clear fluid noted in the left tympanic membrane. Anytime we have clear fluid coming from the ears, we need to worry about skull fracture because that's cerebral spinal fluid. So there's also edema with dark ecchymosis over the mastoid process. So again, bruising that we can see. Bilateral periorbital ecchymosis is noted. Again, those are signs of skull fracture. Left pupil is dilated and fixed. The right pupil responds sluggishly to light. So this guy is in really bad shape. He has mid-chest to clavicular chest contusions localized to the left side. So he has, again, bruising all over with left-sided crepitus. Lung sounds and chest expansion were as noted above. So very minimal left expansion movement on the left. He's got lots of left-sided injuries as well with those fractured ribs. His abdomen is slightly firm. Tenderness over the left upper quadrant to light fingertip palpation. He has a positive Cullen sign. A positive Cullen sign is an indicator of intra-abdominal bleeding. He has a positive Kerr sign, that left shoulder pain, and that is due to accumulation of blood in the peritoneal cavity. This is a general, it's classic sign for a ruptured spleen. And if we think about the accident, it happened on his left side. He struck a tree on the left side. So he had front and left-sided impact. So if we're thinking about the left sides of our body, what organs are on the left side of our body that we need to be concerned about? So the ribs, the heart is protected under there, but can also get bruised through the process. We have our stomach is in more on our left side in our abdomen. We have our spleen. The pancreas is kind of in that area, a little more centered, but is over in that area as well. So we kind of need to start thinking what other things could be going wrong due to the impact and the area of impact on their body. No urethral trauma noted. So when they do a genital urinary assessment, they do not find any damage or injury there. Their Foley catheter is inserted with return of 400 cc's of clear yellow urine, negative for blood, glucose, or ketones. So that is indicative of no bladder injury. So we're very happy about that. Okay, I want to take a second and just talk before I go to the next page to the labs. When we're talking about his breathing, he was able to breathe on his own, but he wasn't compensating with his respirators. If someone has a fracture above the cervical level 4, a C4, they have total loss of respiratory function, so he would not be able to breathe on his own. If it's below C4, they will have diaphragmatic breathing and have hypoventilation, and so they're not going to be able to control, again, like compensate, like I mentioned earlier. So that's probably his level. It's below C4, but it's still probably pretty high in that cervical. Because he's not able to move his legs at all, it may be high thoracic, low cervical fracture is what we can guess has happened to him. So flipping the page, we're going to talk about some labs. As we look at these, sodium is 150, which is, hopefully you're filling this in before I say it, it's high. Any thoughts as to why it could be high? That's what we need to think about there. Could be, even though we've given him a lot of fluids, he has signs of intra-abdominal bleeding. He has signs of possible bleeding around his heart. He has multiple lacerations that are bleeding. So it could be, even though he's had fluids due to some hemoconcentration, his chloride is also elevated, possibly due to that same thing. His potassium at 6.7. Hopefully when you saw that, a big red flashing light went off in your head and you said, that's terribly high. We're very, very concerned about that. Very hyperkalemic. We are going to need to cardioprotect him so we don't have dysrhythmias, so we don't have continued peak T waves, wide QRS, and possibly a cardiac event that would occur. So we need to have that. Why would his potassium be high? That's the question we have to ask. It can be from hemoconcentration, but this is almost too high for hemoconcentration. So why would his potassium be high? My thought there, again, goes back to our cells, all the way back to our first unit. As the red blood cells get damaged, they're releasing that potassium, and that potassium then is getting out into the blood and down into the kidneys, and the kidneys aren't excreting it like they need to because of damage, and we'll talk about their values here in a minute. So that potassium's high, again, from all of the trauma that the body has been going through. Calcium, again, is high. Could be due to hemoconcentration. He also has some fractured bones, obviously, that could release a little calcium, so we have to watch for that. We'll have to watch that level and see what happens. If we protect with calcium gluconate, that will go up even higher. But as his body, we heal, we stop some of that bleeding, that should go, those numbers should trend down as well. His BUN and creatinine are both extremely elevated. BUN normal is 10 to 20, and he's at 70. Creatinine is 0.6 to 1.2, and he is also up to 1.6. So we have to worry about kidney damage. At this point, another reason for those fluids to be going in at such a high rate that will help the body be able to flush down those extra red blood cells and therefore help it to not clog up the kidneys and actually cause kidney damage. So those fluids need to stay running at a high rate. Our glucose is elevated, and that can be high just even from a stress response in the body. Once our body has any trauma of any sort, our glucose levels can increase. The other thought, if we would have drawn a white count, a WBC, that would have probably been high initially as well. Not that he would necessarily have infection at this point, but again, that trauma to the body, our body naturally says, oh my goodness, something's going on. We need to send out our fighters to prevent infection. So our white count probably initially would be high as well. Our hemoglobin and hematocrit are also both high, can be from hemoconcentration. Even though he is having some bleeding out, he is very concentrated. So those will come down. They're not extremely high. As we continue to fill his fluids with the, hopefully we'll give him some blood. We'll also hopefully give him a lot of IV fluid, because that's really what he needs to maintain circulation, is just large flow of normal saline or LR. His PT, PTINR, and bleeding studies are all within normal limits. Oh, goodness, finally something that is right. Yay. TNC stands for type and cross for 5 units. That was his order. So there are have orders for blood, and they're type and screening for 10 units. So, and that generally, that takes a little bit of time. They can give O-neg blood if needed. But again, if they have time and they can type and cross, they're going to do that. His blood alcohol level, as you see there, is 0.365. Wow. He, at 0.08, they're considered legally intoxicated. So he, if he was driving at all with a 0.365, that means he ingests probably quite a bit of alcohol. He is quite tolerant to alcohol. And he also will have severe CNS depression and even unconsciousness. So it's going to be hard to tell, is it from his alcohol level or is it from his injury? So just another hard piece to the puzzle there. His ABGs, again, these were drawn on 15 liters with a non-rebreather mask on. His pH is 7.29, which is low. PaCO2, 68, which is quite high. And that hopefully would make sense to us, because what was his respirations? His respirations were slow. He was very had hypoventilation. And so when you breathe slower, the carbon dioxide is going to build up in your system. And that's what that's showing there. His bicarb, his HCO3 is 22. That's still normal. And that should make sense to us as well, because this is a traumatic injury that just occurred. So his kidneys take longer to compensate. So they haven't even started their process yet. His PaO2 is low at 76. So he doesn't have enough oxygen yet in his blood that he needs, and his O2 sat is 83%. And with his level of injury with a diaphragmatic breathing, that probably is not going to increase on his own without some help of the ventilator. And I'm sure you will address that in your next question. So he is going to need to be vented to get his respiratory acidosis corrected. All right, that goes through the first section of this case, gives you my general thoughts. And hopefully this will help you as you complete the rest of the questions. Have a great weekend.